This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. 2 weeks ago, I read Ken Lange's essay, Exquisite Hours, and in it he referred to many poems and quotes that he loved. By the way, if you want to hear that again, please go to WDRT.org and the archive podcasts. One part of that essay that really stayed with me is his talking about Lauren Isley's experience with a fox pup. I thought I'd like to read the Isley essay today from 1969. It was included in his book, The Unexpected Universe. Isley was born in 1907 and died in 1977. And from Wiki, he was an American anthropologist, educator, philosopher, and natural science writer who taught and published books from the 1950s through the 70s. He received many honorary degrees and was a fellow of multiple professional societies. At his death, he was Benjamin Franklin Professor of Anthropology and History of Science at the University of Pennsylvania. He was a scholar and writer of imagination and grace, whose reputation and accomplishments extend far beyond the campus where he taught for 30 years. His reputation was established primarily through his books, including The Immense Journey, 1957, Darwin's Century, 1958, The Unexpected Universe, 1969, The Night Country, 1971, and his memoir, All the Strange Hours. I sure hope to read every one of those. If you haven't discovered Lauren Isley, here we go. The essay's called The Innocent Fox. We inhabit a spiritual twilight on this planet. It is perhaps the most poignant of all the deprivations to which man has been exposed by nature. I have said deprivation, but perhaps I should, rather, maintain that this feeling of loss is an unrealized anticipation. We imagine we are day creatures, but we grope in a lawless and smoky realm toward an exit that eludes us. We appear to know instinctively that such an exit exists. I am not the first man to have lost his way, only to find, if not a gate, a mysterious hole in a hedge that a child would know at once led to some other dimension as the world's end. Such passageways exist, or man would not be here. Not for nothing did Santayana once contend that life is a movement from the forgotten into the unexpected. As adults, we are preoccupied with living. As a consequence, we see little. At the approach of age, some men look about them at last and discover the hole in the hedge leading to the unforeseen. By then, there is frequently no child companion to lead them safely through. After one or two experiences of getting impaled on thorns, the most persistent individual is apt to withdraw and assert angrily that no such opening exists. My experience has been quite the opposite, but I have been fortunate. After several unsuccessful but tantalizing trials, which I intend to disclose, I had the help not of a child, but of a creature who appropriately came out of a quite unremarkable and prosaic den. There was nothing in retrospect at all mysterious or unreal about him. Nevertheless, the creature was baffling, just as, I suppose, to animals, man himself is baffling. The episode occurred upon an unengaging and unfrequented shore. It began in late afternoon of a day devoted at the start to ordinary scientific purposes. There was the broken prow of a beached boat subsiding in heavy sand left by the whim of ancient currents a long way distant from the shifting coast. Somewhere on the horizon wavered the tenuous outlines of a misplaced building, growing increasingly insubstantial in the autumn light. After my companions had taken their photographs and departed, their persistent voices were immediately seized upon and absorbed by the extending immensity of the incoming fog. The fog trailed in wisps over the upturned ribs of the boat. For a time I could see it fingering the tracks of some small animal, as though engaged in a belated dialogue with the creature's mind. The tracks crisscrossed a dune, and there the fog hesitated, as though puzzled. Finally it approached and enwrapped me, as though to peer in my face. I was not frightened, but I also realized I was not intended immediately to leave. I sat down, then, and rested my back against the overturned boat. All around me, the stillness intensified, and the wandering tendrils of the fog continued their search. Nothing escaped them. Finally, the dawn began to touch the sea, and then the worn timbers of the hulk beside which I had sheltered reddened just a little. It was then that I saw the miracle. I saw it because I was hunched at ground level, smelling rank of fox, and no longer gazing with upright human arrogance upon the things of the world. I did not realize at first what it was I looked upon. As my wandering attention centered, I saw nothing but two small projecting ears lit by the morning sun. Beneath them, a small, neat face looked shyly up at me. The ears moved at every sound, drank in the gull's cry and the far horn of a ship. They crinkled. I began to realize only with curiosity they had not learned to fear. The creature was very young. He was alone in a dread universe. I crept on my knees around the prow and crouched beside him. It was a small fox pup from a den under the timbers who looked up at me. God knows what had become of his brothers and sisters. His parent must not have been home from hunting. He innocently selected what I think was a chicken bone from an untidy pile of splintered rubbish and shook it at me invitingly. There was a vast, playful humor in his face. If there was only one fox in the world and I could kill him, I would do. The words of a British poacher in a pub rasped in my ears. I dropped even further and painfully away from human stature. It has been said repeatedly that one can never, try as he will, get around to the front of the universe. Man is destined to see only its far side, to realize nature only in retreat. Yet here was the thing in the midst of the bones, the wide-eyed, innocent fox inviting me to play. With the innate courtesy of its two forepaws, placed appealingly together, along with a mock shake of the head, the universe was swinging in some fantastic fashion to present its face, and the face was so small that the universe itself was laughing. It was not a time for human dignity. It was a time only for careful observance of amenities written behind the stars. Gravely, I arranged my forepaws while the puppy whimpered with ill-concealed excitement. I drew the breath of a fox's den into my nostrils. On impulse, I picked up clumsily a whiter bone and shook it in teeth that had not entirely forgotten their original purpose. Round and round we tumbled for one ecstatic moment. We were the innocent thing in the midst of the bones, born in the egg, born in the den, born in the dark cave with the stone and axe close to hand, born at last in human guise, to grow coldly remote in the room with the rifle rack upon the wall. But I had seen my miracle. I had seen the universe as it begins for all things. It was in reality a child's universe, a tiny and laughing universe. I rolled the pup on his back and ran, literally ran, for the nearest ridge. The sun was half out of the sea, and the world was swinging back to normal. The adult foxes would already be trotting home. I think I can safely put it down that I had been allowed my miracle. It was very small, as is the way of great things. I have been permitted to correct time's arrow for a space of perhaps 5 minutes, and that is not a boon granted to all men. If I were to render a report upon this episode, I would say that men must find a way to run the arrow backward. Doubtless this is impossible in the physical world, but in the memory and the will, man might achieve the deed if we would try. For the moment, I had held the universe at bay by the simple expedient of sitting on my haunches before a fox den and tumbling about with a chicken bone. It was the gravest, most meaningful act I shall ever accomplish, but as Thoreau once remarked of some peculiar errand of his own, there is no use reporting it to the Royal Society. And that's the end of the essay. The essay is called The Innocent Fox. And Isley's name is spelled Loren, L-O-R-E-N, Isley, E-I-S-E-L-E-Y. I hope this inspires you to look at more of his writing. I also wanted to read a poem by Mary Oliver called The Hermit Crab. You remember hermit crabs. When they get too big, they seek another shell to move into. Once I looked inside the darkness of a shell folded like a pastry, and there was a fancy face, or almost a face. It turned away and frisked up its brawny forearm so quickly against the light, and my looking in, I scarcely had time to see it gleaming under the pure white roof of old calcium. When I set it down, it hurried along the tide line of the sea, which was slashing along as usual, shouting and hissing toward the future, turning its back with every tide on the past, leaving the shore littered every morning with more ornaments of death. What a pearly rubble from which to choose a house like a white flower, and what a rebellion to leap into it and hold on, connecting everything, the past to the future, which is, of course, the miracle, which is the only argument there is against the sea. And that's from House of Light by Mary Oliver. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.